single.
Yeah.
On my side, I try to do the iOS align to base. The times went down, but still are not the same as...
Did you have the same number of faults and
same number of non-blocking writes as non-blocking reads.
Okay.
When I discussed it with Jesus, he has a good explanation for that.
Mm.
Is that I might be overflowing the queue of requests, and then you need to wait until one finishes before sending the new one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's blocking again.
Yeah.
The times went down from 1 minute to seconds to 52 seconds, 10 more seconds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and without non-blocking writes... By the way, before we continue, it might be a good idea to explain...
Yeah, to explain all the term.
Yeah.
I finally implemented the read from patches for the file system. It's not complete since right now it reads from patches if the buffer is fully contained on one page. If the patch crosses boundaries, then I don't find it yet on the list of patches.
We don't handle that in anonymous either, so I think in anonymous we just don't do it to begin with.
In anonymous, it would be very less probable
yeah.
that something like that would happen.
Yeah.
So it may be okay to avoid it. Avoid that. I mean, with anonymous, it's really...
Yeah, we found it didn't happen quite often.
Right.
And it really only happens on x86.
Right. Right. And I'm guessing that it's also very complex to handle, even if it does happen.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But in case of file systems, reading from... or rather handling a patch that spans multiple pages should be relatively straightforward.
Yeah, I think I know how to do it. Because there was another part of the code that I just avoided to modify. Because it was kind of hard to do it with small modifications to implement the read from patches without having to allocate a buffer to do the double copy. So I just avoided that part, assuming that just to avoid it for now.
But in a
and
way,
that part is the one that sees if you are going beyond the page, so it sets the ending to the end of the page.
Right. And then now can you describe your micro benchmark?
Okay. The micro benchmark, what it does is it uses a previously located file. So we avoid the problem of writing to a page that doesn't exist and triggering an appending. So what it does, I pre-allocate the whole file, and then the benchmark, what it does is 10,000 random writes. And for each write, it does a read of the same content. It does it to random offsets with random sizes. I limit the sizes to a size smaller than the size of a page, just to avoid the same problem. I run the benchmark first without non-blocking writes enabled. The average is 1 minute 12 seconds, then or 13 seconds, I think. Then
yeah,
I run it with just non-blocking writes, as it was before, and then it went down for 3 or 4 seconds, 1 minute 10 seconds. Then I run it with the read from patches, but without aligning it to the offsets of the pages, so sometimes the read or the write will go beyond one page. The time went down to 1 minute, 2 seconds, so there was a 10-second gain just by reading from patches. And then today I just align all the writes to the page, so now all the writes and reads will be in a page, so it will find the patch when try to read, and the time went down to 52 seconds. For the one where I didn't align the patches, I count the number of non-blocking writes and non-blocking reads, and there was this difference between the amount of them. When I did the same for the second one, the number perfectly matched. It's the same amount of non-blocking writes and non-blocking reads, so every read was serviced from a patch.
If you want to see, I think, the time go down from 52 seconds even lower, if you go to, can't remember if it's block core or block.h, if you change the maximum queue length to like something bigger than the 128, you'll see it go down even more than that. That's what we did last time. When we left it at 128, it was it would take a little while, but then Lewis started playing around with it, and he put like some like 4,000, and it finished in like 2 seconds.
Well, in this case, because you're doing 10,000 miles, you might have to go all the way to 10,000 to bring it down to 2 seconds or whatever time it takes.
If you play around with the number, you should see the time go down. If we're right, that it's just blocking on the number of IOs.
Right.
Yes, if I don't drop the caches, then it does a really quick, less than a second, because when I see the stats are printed every second.
Mm.
In just one line, it says the amount of hits in the cache that is pretty much the 10,000 for reads and writes. And it does it really quick.
And in that case, the time is less than a second.
Probably. I didn't measure, but in the statistics, all the writes are printed in the same line. So I'm guessing that it was the line of the second.
Yeah.
Okay. Lewis and Ricardo, do you have any questions on what Daniel did?
Is that, I mean, if there are not correctness problems, and assuming that most of the reads are aligned, actually leave it like that, right?
That may not be the case. I mean, reads or even writes, for that matter, right?
The problem is not even aligned. It's that even if the write is more than 4K, then you have the problem.
Yeah.
The size of the write, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, the writes aren't the issue, it's the reads.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, the read.
If you're reading more than whatever fits on a page, or if you cross pages.
Right. But also, I think if the write spans page boundary, you don't create a patch, or do you?
I'm not sure in that part of the code. I'm guessing that it does.
Okay.
Because when I run it, I have more non-blocking writes than reads. So
okay.
I'm guessing that it's doing more.
Yeah.
And
so
it's counting.
I guess we can ask Lewis what he did. So Lewis, do you handle the case where a write spans a page boundary? So you create two patches?
You have to.
I handle it somehow, but I don't remember exactly what I did.
But if you don't, it could be problem. Correct.
No. I'm saying that I handle it somehow. I mean, it could be that just simply skip that case and just let it follow the normal path. Either I created two patches, but I'm sure that I handled it some way and it's correct.
I think the patches are created just because of the amount of the statistics of non-blocking writes.
So you see more than 10,000 non-blocking writes?
Yes, and I see more non-blocking writes than reads. And I'm sure that I'm not handling on the reads, but I don't know what is happening on the writes.
Right. This is when you're not page aligned.
Exactly.
Yeah. So some of your writes are spanning page boundaries. Some of the 10,000 writes are spanning page boundaries, and so you effectively have more than 10,000 patches.
Another thing is that when I run it, aligned it, the two numbers were the same, but they were not 10,000. I'm guessing it may be
hits.
Yeah. That the random ops hit the same page.
Yeah. What is the probability of a hit?
Well, it's 10,000 random offsets on a file of 512 megabytes. So the amount of pages is 512 megabytes divided by 4K.
So that's about 128,000. So if it's 128,000 pages and your 10,000 is about 1%, or less than 1% hit rate, probability of hit.
The number was something around 9,500 something.
Yeah, that's so a little less than 1%. Yeah,
yes.
That makes sense. Okay. Okay, that's good. So, actually, more than.
It could also be prefetch.
9,900. You said right? 9,000.
No, less than
9,500.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's more like 5%.
Well,
the thing is, you don't issue the IO for one page. You issue the IO for, I think, 15 pages. So that page and then 14 other pages.
Oh, yeah, because there is prefetching effects also.
Yeah, well,
even that
15 in
random.
The default case, yeah. It depends. It might at first it'll probably prefetch 15, and there might do a little bit less since it sees that, depending on if the pages are getting hits or not. it'll adjust. So the rest would probably just be prefetch page hits.
My benchmark use the function run without any C, so every run will generate the same random numbers, but I'm guessing that in the same run they should be random enough.
Yeah, and if your memory is large enough to hold all the 10,000 pages, then all the prefetching pages are also candidates for hits.
So
the percentage can be higher than 1%. Okay, so...
I was running that on a real system before. I was running inside a virtual machine, and I had some funny results on the sense that my virtual machine had a small size memory, but the system that was running the virtual machine was caching the disk of the machine memory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on which one I drop the cache, it would be really fast, and the numbers would be non-blocking writes, but still is from memory to memory, because it's virtualizing the disk.
I see.
So depending on how I drop the cache, it had funny results, but it's still consistent.
Yeah.
Funny in the sense of the times that it would take.
Interesting. Okay. So I think what we have right now is an implementation that does non-blocking writes and read from patches for file systems other than NFS.
I think so, yes.
Right. Okay. And the other thing which I think you wanted to do this week was to sit with Jesus and learn about the CPU scheduler and IO scheduler changes that he's been making. Were you able to do that?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about it. I actually found one path where the process would be scheduled to yield the CPU, but it wouldn't get its state changed in the scheduler. So it would yield, but it would eventually come back and possibly do non-blocking writes again if it still went through the same path.
So
there was just a case where it didn't get set as we had flags for the tasks, and we just labeled them non-blocking writes, and if it's a non-blocking write task, we move it to a separate queue. So it was scheduling, but it wasn't getting moved to the other queue. So those are actually running now, because I found it when I was looking through the code with Daniel.
So, Jesus, can you repeat? We got lost at some point.
Yeah, me too.
So
it's going too fast, I think.
So there was one case where the process would yield because it was going to do a non-blocking write, but it wouldn't change its state, so that it wouldn't get changed to the non-blocking write queue. It would stay on the normal run queue.
Hmm.
So... It would yield normally, but it would get scheduled to run again as a normal process rather than only running when there's nothing else on the normal run queue.
I see. So there was this one condition.
Did you fix
that? I fixed it and I'm testing it now, so I'll have numbers for that.
You don't have numbers?
They're running right now, so...
So remind me the last time the numbers, how they looked like. And
they were good except for BATIC and PMD. So in the other cases...
What you're saying is that with this fix, those numbers should match vanilla.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, okay. Yeah.
Unless I'm missing something else. But
we don't know if this fix actually changes anything.
Yeah.
Because we don't know if this condition even gets triggered, right?
Yeah. It was just something
that you saw when you were reading the code.
Yeah.
No, but, it's possible, right?
Yeah.
It's possible.
That's why I'm rerunning them.
Actually, would be perfectly the problem that we're having with those behaved benchmarks.
Yeah. Because all the other benchmarks do fine. They get, between 12 and 20% increase. So I think one of them, the least they got, was, 5%.
Right.
And the only ones that were really misbehaving was BATIC.
Right, except that
PMD.
we have an alternate explanation for why it's doing bad. It might be doing badly as well.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think if at the end of the day, if we have good results with the benchmarks, I think that it's good proof that non-blocking rates have benefits, right?
Yeah.
Now, I think we should include that explanation of the IO scheduler anyway in the paper, in that we also realize that these kind of problems could happen and probably some features.
Yeah. So So yeah, I do want to talk about the IO scheduler, but before that, I want to make sure that, you know, Daniel has an opportunity to talk about whatever he did. So besides the IO, the CPU scheduler, were you also able to look at the IO scheduler?
I haven't made any changes to that.
You
since,
haven't?
Yeah, since no. I wanted to make sure that it actually was the problem before I started editing a whole bunch of stuff. And
right. Well, I think that, I mean, that problem seems like a valid problem, even if it doesn't happen with these benchmarks.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that the problem doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And by the way, the problem that we are talking about, just want to make sure that everyone is in agreement with the problem, which is that a process with non-blocking writes issues a blocking operation, let's say a blocking read, and it has to wait much longer than it would have to wait if the system was, was implementing blocking writes, because non-blocking writes creates all these additional IOs that hog the IO scheduler queue,
mm-hmm.
right? So the blocking operations block for longer, and that could potentially, create a slowdown, which would make performance worse than vanilla.
And that problem only happens if there is more than one process contending from the device.
Yeah, more than one thread that's contending on the.
Even for one thread, it would still happen. Since we're issuing all the writes asynchronously, they would build up, and eventually we might have a blocking operation.
Except that, if there is only one thread, all of those previous IO operations would need to be issued anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So the read, if the process, let's say, blocks on the read, that it might block for much longer period of time, but the overall execution time shouldn't be worse, because all of those IOs need to be done anyway, even with the vanilla system.
That's true, but in the case that it's writes with no reads, then we can just move that read to the front of the queue, service it, and let the process get back to.
In that case, our system can perform even faster than vanilla.
Yeah.
But here we are trying to understand why non-blocking writes does worse than vanilla in some cases.
Yeah.
And with a single thread, I don't see an explanation for how a non-blocking can do worse than vanilla. But if you have multiple threads, then I do see that possibility.
Yeah. Especially since by default it uses CFQ.
Hmm. Right. So about that, I think we can discuss this now, which is, well, what can we do? Right? What can we do for a solution to this problem? And we have some ideas, which is prioritize inside the kernel IO scheduler,
mm-hmm.
blocking operations versus non-blocking operations. So what are your thoughts here? Daniel, what do you think?
Well, one of the things that we discussed before is trying to implement a mirror solution from the CPU scheduler.
Mm-hmm.
You just have two different queues where you have the regular IO and the non-blocking IO, and try to pick always from the regular one, unless it's until it gets empty, and then start picking from the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing about those is if you go on that direction, you might lose opportunities of merging operations and trying to avoid long seeks, because you are just ignoring all those IOs that could be beneficial to merge with the other IOs.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. Well, what I was thinking was shoving them on the same queue and then just simply moving them around whenever. So let's say I issue a blocking read operation and there's a bunch of non-blocking writes sitting in front of it, then just promote that blocking operation to the front. That way they all stay on one queue, so it's easier to handle the merging and also the total number of requests, since we only want whatever gets set. So like, let's say it's 128, it would be harder to manage two queues and making sure that neither of them go go past that. Or it could be that we end up hogging the queue, let's say. One thing that can happen is, let's say we issue one blocking read operation every once in a while, but there's a bunch of non-blocking writes sitting there. and eventually the queue will just fill up, and let's say we're issuing blocking reads, which is such frequency that very little non-blocking writes get to finish. So whenever a non-blocking write does happen, then we eventually block for a really long time. Although I think that would still
be... Yeah, the blocking operations kind of start the non-blocking ones.
Yeah.
But that's fine. That's what we want.
No, but they could start with forever, I think. If you have a lot of processes that are only doing blocking operations, even though the non-blocking needs to be deprioritized, they need to...
Well, eventually, what will happen, what we can do at least is, well, the queue's full, now this write becomes a blocking write at a certain point.
There should be a way to then give it priority to the non-blocking writes if they have been waiting for a long time.
See why the blocking write should non-blocking write should ever be prioritized. I mean, why?
What if the queue is ever full?
If a read, a blocking read of the same thing comes, then you should transform the non-blocking write.
Then it becomes a blocking operation.
Yeah, and that's
we need to have the ability to change a fetch that is issued as a result of a non-blocking write into at a lower priority into a higher priority fetch if there is a read to the same page.
Yeah,
which cannot be served from batch. Right, so we need to be able to do that.
I think that's not too hard because if we have a blocking operation, we have the page and there's a function that allows you to get the block device and then the queue for that, and then we already have the page, so we would just need to find the request and change the priority.
Yeah, it might be simple. I don't know how. How easy it is from an implementation standpoint.
The other thing is that I don't see why you should put a limit on the amount of requests. If you separate the both queues, why to put a limit on the amount of requests and the blocking?
There's a limit on the total request on the total number of requests per device that you can adjust. So there's a default of 128, but you can adjust it to whatever.
Yeah, what I meant is that you could still have that default limit for the blocking reads queue, and then the other one could be infinite if there is no problem with memory.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's why
there is a limit is because of memory issues.
Yeah. Every bio takes every bio request takes a certain amount of memory. So
yeah, and it's at least one page or block or that's significant. If you have a no bound on the number of IO requests in the queue, then you might be eating up a lot of memory.
Yeah, then I have some problems with the limit because you could be accepting so many non-blocking writes until you hit the limit, and then a blocking read won't come for a non-blocking write.
Take into account that, the scheduler only reserves 4 of those requests.
Yeah.
And if you want to go further than 4,
you need to allocate memory.
It has to fight for memory, just as the rest of the kernel.
Yeah. So you're guaranteed that you're going to have at least 4 slots to make a request with, but then there's a maximum limit of 128, but only 4 are guaranteed. So when you want to allocate that 5th and 6th one, you actually have to allocate memory.
So, my point was that if we have those limits on memory, even though if we prioritize the blocking operations, if there are too many non-blocking operations, we have problems because of the limit. We cannot accept the blocking one until...
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So at some point, we might... It would probably make sense for us to reserve some spots so that we can always accept a blocking read in the queue, right? Mm-hmm. That's one way to deal with this, to ensure that the non-blocking writes don't fill up the queue. So there's always some space.
I would say that, in fact, what we should do is to keep the 4 that we have reserved for blocking and let the non-blocking one compete for memory.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Okay, so that addresses the issue of managing requests inside the OS.
Yeah.
Right? There is another issue of managing requests inside the device.
So in terms of like NCQ?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do we do there?
Can we do
I don't know. I was looking up some stuff on NCQ in the drivers, in the driver code, and I didn't see any, like, the only thing I saw was a way to submit requests and find out how many requests there are pending so you can submit some more.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see a way to, like, cancel or reorder.
I don't think the NCQ protocol includes any kind of priority or anything, so...
It just says, how many are there, and can I send some more?
Yeah, I think we cannot do much about it.
Well, I think we can do something.
Okay.
We can make our own NCQ control.
No. Well, in the end, the OS is the one that's filling the device queue.
Yeah.
Okay, so if the OS didn't exist, there would be no device level.
Yeah.
If that's true, we should be able to do something at the OS level.
We can always do something in terms of making like some plugging time before we send stuff to the NCQ controller.
We could do that. What else can we do? So you're saying that we'll wait for some time, like an anticipatory mechanism before we send stuff to the...
So we sent there's a couple non-blocking rates sitting here, but maybe there's a blocking one that's going to come. So if that one comes...
Yeah, the problem is that if you committed to a solution or a decision, then you're going to change.
Yeah.
Because once you send something, you are controlling it.
Yeah. Yes, that is true. We know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to work with that.
Yeah.
So what else can we do?
We can do... there is one paper from Nakagwami. Semi-preemptive alliance.
Yeah, but that doesn't... I don't think that applies here.
Okay.
Yeah, the preemptible IO is just for... It's for a very different kind of application and use.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that you can break the non-blocking write IOs in smaller pieces to keep better control of what non-blocking write IOs are inside the device.
Yeah, think about something simpler than that. Okay, what is NCQ? What does NCQ provide us?
Command queuing.
It does provide command queuing, and what does command queuing mean?
You can queue commands.
Yes. Well, yes, you can queue commands.
You can send.
Can you queue? Can you queue infinite number of commands?
No.
Okay, so you can queue, let's say, 128 commands.
Yeah.
Can you queue 125 commands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you queue 10 commands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have control.
Yeah.
On the device level queue.
So what you're saying is to control the queue size?
Yes.
Depending on how many blocking versus non-blocking operations you have.
Yeah, I mean, this is a control you have at the OS level. The OS can choose to either submit a request or not.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand that. Now, how can we guarantee anything with from the queue size?
Okay, given a queue size, now the next question is, if I can control the queue size, can I ensure that the device... is responsive with some latency given a queue size?
Yes, you can.
So if I let's say control the queue size, it doesn't have to be dynamic. Let's say it's a static decision. Say I'm going to keep only 10 requests pending at the device at any given time.
Okay.
Right? Of non-blocking writes.
Yeah.
I don't see how the latency is directly directly to the queue size, because it also depends on what kind of request and where in the disk.
That's absolutely right. But all I'm saying is that if the queue at the device is shorter for a given set of requests, the latency will be, you know, lower for the next request you submit. Let's say you have a set of requests in the queue, right? And you have a new request that comes in, right? You submit that new request. It has a certain amount of latency until completion, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, from that original set of requests you had before, take out one request and issue that same request again. What I'm saying is that the latency would be equal or less.
This is before submitting the request to...
Yeah, before submitting the request, you look at the queue,
okay,
right? And make sure that the queue is always in a state where your blocking operations have some bounded latency. The other side of this optimization problem is that you need to have enough requests in the queue so that the device level parallelism is exploited.
So we just sort of need to find this balance between latency and responsiveness and having...
Right. So you have some control on the NCQ device level queue, and you could probably exploit it. I don't have all the answers. All I'm saying is that you can do something here.
Mm-hmm. I think a good summary or information of that can be found in the Barda paper, right?
Right. So
I can think of cases where that may not be true. Let's say that your queue size is 10, and every 11 requests, they are contiguous. Then if you were able to put it in the queue, then the device can merge them and serve them together. If not, it will do more seek operations.
Right.
Stuff
so,
like that.
So here we are not looking for, I guess, absolute guarantees, but probabilistic behavior. Right?
Okay.
So I'm not saying that you cannot have adversarial cases where the latency is not reduced when you reduce the queue size. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that probabilistically, if you have a smaller queue at the device level, you will have a lower latency or expected latency for a new request that you send to the device.
Well, in terms of total latency?
Latency for that new request.
Okay, but not total.
Well, I think in that case it would be that...
Yeah, that includes device level queuing, whatever is required. Right, so that the once you submit that request, the latency it takes for the device to respond back that the request has been served.
For that one request?
For that one request. Because I'm thinking about a situation where you have, you know, non-blocking writes filling up the device queue and blocking all the, you know, higher priority blocking fetches. And that's the situation we want to try and avoid or minimize, right? So if we have a bound on the number of non-blocking writes that we have outstanding at the device, then we'll have a bound on the responsiveness for the blocking operations, if there are any.
So essentially just say, well, we'll reserve this amount and we can send this number of non-blocking writes at a time,
yeah.
But since these other blocking operations are obviously higher priority, then... we can reserve the rest of the space we can leave for that.
Exactly. So can we do something there? And what is the structured way of thinking about this?
We can do that.
Implement something like that, that's what you're
asking?
No, I'm thinking about more from a standpoint of, you know, what are the parameters? We can certainly implement it.
Yeah.
Right? Implementation, it might just mean that it's a complicated implementation. And that's fine, because right now we're just thinking about whether we can use this idea to deal with an NCQ device, exploit the performance that it offers, while at the same time not significantly degrade worst case performance.
Yeah.
Right, when you have, you know, blocking reads stuck behind large numbers of non-blocking requests.
Okay.
At the device level.
Okay.
Because we do have a solution at the OS level. We need a similar solution at the device level, but an OS level solution.
So, I'm thinking on those lines that we could set as a parameter some ratio between how many non-blocking writes and blocking reads we'll have in the device.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how many blocking reads are already there, we can adjust the queue size to allow more non-blocking writes or less. So
yeah,
we never have too many non-blocking writes and few blocking reads.
It's not about the ratio. I think the number of non-blocking write IOPS should be fixed depending on what guarantees we want to make to the blocking IOPS.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So here's one scenario, and it's not the one. It's not
essentially what we're looking
but,
for. I think it's just a latency guarantee on the blocking operations.
If you fix that and there is no blocking operation that comes, then you're losing
yes,
opportunity.
That's true. That is true.
But then
if you fix the amount of non-blocking writes in the queue and there is no blocking operation coming, you're losing the opportunity to send more and take advantage of the queue.
That's true, but point is that
you also risk the problem with NCQ.
I guess it's not that we want that amount of non-blocking writes, but we need a maximum amount of non-blocking writes. Right?
Yeah. Well, here's another way of thinking about the problem, right? So you have a certain number of non-blocking writes, and you say, let's say, are conservative about that number. You make it really small. Let's say you make it 5.
Mm-hmm.
Only 5 non-blocking writes at the device at any given time, right? Our goal primary goal is to ensure that the performance with non-blocking writes is equivalent to a vanilla system in the worst case, right? So if you are conservative about the number of outstanding non-blocking writes at the device, we would have a better chance of meeting that goal. Yes, we might lose some opportunity for even better performance with non-blocking writes in the best case. Okay, so that's the trade-off. How much can you be better in the best case performance with non-blocking writes versus how much worse can you be in the worst case performance of non-blocking writes relative to vanilla? That's really the trade-off we are trying to address here.
Okay. So
we can always present both, because in the case that we're more conservative, we're closer to vanilla, but we can't get as much benefit from non-blocking writes. So maybe we're just at the same speed as vanilla. But then in the case where we say, let non-blocking writes issue all those IOs and do the parallelism, there might be cases where it does a whole lot better, but then there's cases where it can do a whole lot worse.
Yeah. I'm thinking on a number to put how many non-blocking writes to ensure the same performance of vanilla. And I'm guessing that we should allow this amount to be equal on how many different processes are doing non-blocking writes, one per each. Because in the vanilla case, there will be the blocking read. There will be one per process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So adjust the sum of non-blocking writes and blocking operations to the number of processes doing it.
No, but the one
assuming
process,
that is one per each.
One process can do multiple non-blocking writes.
That's what I'm saying.
In the worst case, it would just be vanilla.
If you fix it to one, it will be the same as vanilla.
Yeah.
But vanilla will do only one.
So Daniel, so what you're saying is that the maximum number of non-blocking writes should be equal to the amount of threads that are doing non-blocking writes.
Exactly.
Okay. that has at least one non-blocking write.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that would essentially degrade...
Well, with that, you should subtract also the ones that are doing blocking operations. I mean, that equal to the amount of threads that are only doing at least one blocking write. Because if they are doing a blocking operation, then they are already counted in the side of blocking.
Yeah, so this is something for us to think about more.
What I'm saying is that in that case, then you will have in the queue the same as you will have if you have vanilla. Because you will have one operation per process.
Yeah.
Yeah, except that we are not exactly issuing...
in the same order.
No, the IO operation one per process to the device level queue. Right, we're just issuing, say, non-blocking writes in a scheduler order. IO scheduler
order. So you're saying that one process can send up two of them, and one of them then don't be able to send one because of telling me.
Yeah, but if it's non-blocking, I don't think it really matters. What really matters are the blocking operations.
So if you have that bound in the amount of non-blocking operations, then the ratio of non-blocking to blocking will be the same as in the vanilla case. For those blocking operations, they will be competing with the same amount of operations, even that they might be different, because some process will be sending once and the other doesn't.
Right. Well, of course, they are competing with the other non-blocking writes that are at the device as well. So the blocking operations could experience more latency than they would if they are running in a vanilla system, because there are these other non-blocking writes at the device level.
Well, I was thinking at the device level.
Yeah, but if you have a vanilla system, there are no non-blocking operations at the device level. So the only thing that you do have are...
But they are the same. Okay, let's put this example.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
In the vanilla case, you have 10 blocking operations. In the non-blocking case, you have 6 non-blocking operations and 4 blocking operations. You can have more non-blocking operations because... you are allowing the application to continue. But these 4 should be competing only with 6, because in the vanilla case there were 10.
Yeah.
So that's how you limit not...
I see what you're saying now. Absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So then we would ensure that the amount of contention at the device level is preserved.
Yeah.
On terms of amount of IO, because they might be not the same IO.
Yeah. But we could also make them the same IOs if you want to, right? We can dispatch to the NCQ device whatever we want.
Yeah.
And we could pick IOs from specific processes and dispatch them.
So not allowing 2 non-blocking writes from the same process at the same time in the device?
Something like that.
Yeah, we can do.
But what we do want to do is also utilize additional parallelism provided by non-blocking writes. So I think these are two different configurations in my mind. One is the configuration that you described, where we pick only one process, one IO per process to issue to the NCQ device at any given time, right? And the other is, will we allow more? You know, there we allow an additional set of IOs beyond just one IO per process, so that we can extract more throughput from the NCQ device.
Yeah.
So we could experiment with both configurations.
So, at least on the one that I mentioned, I don't see how the performance could be different from vanilla.
It wouldn't be worse than vanilla, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
We might be able to ensure what we're looking for, that we have at least the same performance.
Yeah. That's true. That is true. Yeah. Okay, so that's good. I think we have a reasonable solution to the problem, right? That seems doable now.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So the key is to sort of play with what are the IOs we issue to the device, right? Within the MCQ limit, and we could change that and achieve certain different goals.
So, what is the normal case when there is no NCQ? How is different the NCQ phase from the non-NCQ phase?
You only issue, you only dispatch one IO at a time.
Yeah.
So you send an IO, you wait for completion, send another one.
Yeah, with non-blocking writes and no NCQ.
I was thinking, how different are the same solution for the NCQ case and the non-NCQ case, if you're already working at the OS level?
Well, with the no NCQ, you only need the reordering of IOs in the OS scheduler, the IO scheduler. In the NCQ case, based on our discussion that we had just now, we are choosing which IOs to dispatch to the device at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's an additional thing we have to do. Because if we dispatch indiscriminately and fill up the NCQ, the queue limit, with all non-blocking writes, then our blocking fetches could be stuck inside the OS for much longer than they have to.
Or even stuck
inside the device level queue. Yeah.
Right, what I'm thinking is that if we develop the solution for NCQ, the other case is the same NCQ with size 1, right?
True.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe module becomes redundant. It doesn't do anything.
Okay.
So, Luis, Ricardo, do you have any thoughts? And what should we be doing next?
On what we're doing next?
Yeah. Well, first of all, any thoughts on what we just discussed? And we should probably talk about what to do next in the coming week.
Our deadline is January 30, right?
January something, early January.
They say to see where we are aiming.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw it and the ASTRA was 23 and the deadline was 30. It's
ATC?
I think so.
That doesn't sound right. It's usually very, very early in January.
When I saw it, I saw it to the end of January. I'm not sure if...
Three abstracts, 10... full paper, but that's maximum.
No, this one.
Same.
Okay, so I think for the paper to be strong, I think we need some good experiments.
Yeah.
I think you need to click on.
I think we're doing in terms of the IO scheduler and also the recap.
Yeah, so it's late January.
We have more time.
That's interesting. Well, that's actually a very good change. So,
the paper is on 30th.
Yeah, paper is due on 30th of January.
Yep. And the abstract and title is the 23rd.
And the notification is on April 8th, which is also much later. I want to see when SOSP is.
Oh, that's a problem, right?
Yeah, that's they sort of messed up the alignment of the deadlines now, because SOSP is due before the notification. So if we submit to ATC, we cannot submit to SOSP. That's what it means. But we can talk about this later. Let's work on the paper and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so along those lines, what are we doing next? So, Daniel, what's on your list of things to do at
I still had to work the NFS.
NFS client.
Yeah. Wasn't thinking of the letters. NFS client. I haven't worked too much on that. Try to approach the key value store benchmark. After that was the database benchmark. And I wanted to find some file system benchmarks.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like we're going back to the question of benchmarks.
Those are the things that I had to do, at least on my plate.
Okay. No, I mean, no, it's a good thing to do. I think benchmarks are are kind of tricky here for this project. And we need file system benchmarks. I think the ones that we identified are the key value store and maybe some database benchmark.
The SFS,
yeah,
definitely one. Key value store, I think it's very well. Hopefully it works, and if it does, I mean, by works I mean that it exercises on bucket rate. So that one should go in. And also, we talked about some kind of database, but the problem with database is that it has their own cache. So, so what I mentioned last time was something like SQLite.
Try SQLite again.
But it should be simple enough to not include cache.
Okay, so Daniel, how do we prioritize what you're doing? I also want you to make sure that, you know, you get everything you can from Jesus before he goes. I don't know what else remains in terms of knowledge transfer. Is there anything else that you can think of, Jesus? No, the key is that we don't bother you once you go too much. So you want to make sure that you give everything to Daniel before you leave.
I can go, I guess, a little bit more in depth with the scheduler stuff, just to make sure that he knows where everything is, and that's about it. I don't know if
That we'll have to go visit the IO scheduler as well at some point. Maybe not for these benchmarks, but perhaps for some other benchmarks. So if you had some things in mind that you could share with Daniel, that would be good too.
Okay.
And so other than that, Daniel, I guess it would make sense for you to perhaps start with the key value store benchmark and then start looking at something more database oriented. So it would be good to get some results from the implementation that you just did.
Okay, I need to finish that one.
Yeah.
To try to
read from two patches.
So I should delay them the NFS.
Yeah, the NFS client, I think you can wait a little bit more.
The one with that is that pretty much all the code is there. The thing is that I need to find where to put it. If I don't know, I didn't see a way to extract it to functions and call it from the two different paths. So it looks like I need to copy code, which I didn't want to do.
But if NFS that's what goes down like this on path.
But if that's what it takes, let's do it that way.
Yeah.
But before you go in that direction, try to work on these benchmarks first.
Okay.
And so we'll maybe have some data to look at next week.
I can sit down with you when you want to do the read from patches for multiple pages. Since I don't know if you've looked through the code for getting the patches per page and finding other pages, sometimes complicated.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be good. All right, great. So I think that's it from me at least. Lewis, do you have anything else to share?
Yeah, I think very quickly. I think we also need, in the anonymous case, I think we need some benchmark that kind of don't reduce the memory size so much, because people were complaining that this is somewhat false. So I think we need to do something about it. I think even one single experiment where we consolidate a bunch of things, or we run non-blocking drives inside of VMs, and several VMs inside non-blocking drives inside a same host, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that would be good.
I think at least one experiment, and I think that actually would be, I guess that's...
Or possibly having experiments that have really large memory working sets, although those might be hard to find.
Yeah, I think the consolidation benchmark
smarter.
would be an easier sell than relying on a large application, because people might again complain it's not realistic to have such a large memory application. But consolidation is more realistic. All right. Anything else?
No. I think that's all from our side.
So we'll meet again same time next week?
Yeah.
All right. That's next Wednesday.
Yeah. I may not be able to come. I have to check because I have to get my car shipped. That's
okay.
The 5th, right?
Well, what we could do is maybe, you know, meet
I can
a little
call
earlier or meet on Tuesday or Thursday, one of those.
I can
other
meet
days.
Tuesday or Thursday.
Yeah. So why don't, Jesus, why don't you tell us the times that you're available and we can set up a time accordingly. Yeah? All right. All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that's Sam. I want to discuss the NetApp.
Okay, yeah, sure.
What do you think about the...
I want to make sure that Alfredo doesn't run away. There he is. Hey, just give me 2 more minutes. I'll finish talking to Daniel.
Yeah, it's really,
yes.
Really quick.
Yeah.
I had to redo the CV because I don't have neither the paper, neither the master, neither the...
Yeah.
Name
the
of storage.
Yeah, internship, right?
I have to put those things.
Yeah.
The other thing is that I read the thread of emails, and it seems that it requires us to start early, because, that's what
he would like you to start in spring, but it's not a requirement.
I didn't understand that. I didn't understand if what he wanted is to one of us to go on the spring so he can finish with another people in the summer, or... To do a long
internship. I don't know how many positions
he
has. I would guess if I were to guess, it would be only one.
But what I didn't get if the spring thing is that he wanted to do it since the spring to the final of summer, or got it at the spring and then